Yes, grab a cup, grab a seat, and welcome on in to Coffee and Cornbread. Before we get to Auburn, it's time for Throwback Thursday. And last time we heard a great story about an unforgettable celebrity encounter with Michael Jackson. Well, this week, let's just say the story doesn't end quite as well. Daryl Dapridge takes us back to a spring training trip in the mid-90s that led to a heated run-in with one of baseball's biggest personalities, Tommy Lasorda. Here's the story.
So last week I had the opportunity to tell you guys about a story that was pretty special, meeting a celebrity in person. That person acted with grace and class. I'm going to share one today that's the exact opposite, and it has to do with baseball as we do this Throwback Thursday segment here. I think that one of the special things about growing up as a baseball fan is having the opportunity to come face-to-face a lot of times with people you've watched on TV for a very long time or your baseball heroes. Back in 1996, I had the opportunity to go on a spring training trip with my father-in-law, a good friend of mine, and my father-in-law's best friend. And we went in an RV, and it was a dream trip for any baseball fan. We went to, I believe, 12 games in 10 games in 10 days because we went ahead and a couple of those days we did some doubleheaders. So 12 games in 10 days with a couple of those days going to a day game and then a night game, which is a baseball fan's dream. So one particular day we had a ticket to West Palm, and that was at the time where the Braves were training. And it was the Dodgers and the Braves. The Braves were pretty good. As you know, they were in the midst of their big runs, winning a World Series. The Dodgers were a little bit down. And I was sitting about halfway up along the third base side, and in front of me was a young kid, maybe about 10 years old, and his father. And they were dressed in Dodger gear from head to toe. And the kid had like a Dodger pennant, and he had a baseball. He wanted some Dodgers to sign it. And I noticed about that time, Tommy Lasorda, the Dodger manager at the time, step out of the dugout and kind of look around, look at the crowd, you know, kind of talk to some people. So I said to this young man, would you like to go down there and try to get his autograph? And he said, absolutely. Well, the dad didn't want to take him, and I don't know why. I think maybe because he was three beers in. So I went ahead and took the young man down, and Lasorda looks at me, and he gets eye contact with me as I'm right there up against the fence. And he said, I'm not signing any autographs today, guys. I'm just not doing it, fellas. Now, keep in mind, this, I believe, was the season, maybe this was 95, but it was the season right after the player strike. Where, yes, it was 1995, and in 1994, they canceled the World Series. Half the season was gone. They did not play out the season. So you would think that goodwill and just wanting to help the fans would be a thing. But he acted a little bit like a jerk, went back in the dugout, like a gopher going back in a hole. So the kid's disappointed. I come back up. I sit down about halfway up the stands, and I'm talking to my father-in-law and his friend, and he's like, you know, that's unacceptable. That's just not right. Well, I look down there, and I notice that Lasorda is now carrying on a conversation with a very young blonde and her son right there near the dugout and signing stuff for him. So I'm thinking, well, he's changed his mind. Let's go back down there. So I take him back down there. We're standing there. Lasorda looks at me and proceeds to cuss me out up and down and sideways. I told you, you bleep bleep. I wasn't signing anything. Are you stubborn? Are you deaf? So needless to say, I don't care about Tommy Lasorda. I'm not a Dodger fan. The only Dodger I really care about is Jackie Robinson. So I absolutely gave it as good as I got it and blistered him. Veins were coming out of his neck. He was getting so mad. And we're sitting there yelling at each other, and I'm telling him what a sorry piece of bleep I thought he was. He should be nicer to the fans. After everything that happened last year, he said, I don't give a bleep about the fans. And I was like, obviously you don't. And I said, I don't want your autograph. It's this young man. I think you suck. I think your team sucks. I think you're overrated. I think you need to retire. I think you're a joke. And so he didn't like that. So he tried to get me thrown out of the stadium, which at the time was, you know, was the Braves spring training facility. So they did not throw me out. They just told me to go back to my seat. About that time, as I'm walking back to the steps to go up to my seat, some drunken fool behind home plate screams at Lasorda, "Hey, pull your pants down so we can see the rest of your butt, Tommy." And obviously that crossed the line, and he didn't use the word butt. I'm cleaning it up here. So that fan got ejected, but I did not. And by the way, Ryan Clisco hit two home runs, even though it was spring training, and the Braves beat the Dodgers 12-2. And I made sure on my way out of the stadium that I went down there and let Tommy Lasorda know what a fine managerial job he did to get 10 spotted by the Braves, and that there was more to come the rest of the year. Get used to it. He cussed me out again. We went our separate ways. So my moral of this story is, I've heard a lot of things about Tommy Lasorda. People think he's great. People praise him. My one interaction with him was he was a jerk. Part two of this next week will be my short story where I came face-to-face the same day with Pete Rose and Cal Ripken Jr. and had two types of interactions with both of them on that spring training trip, which is definitely worth a view. You guys will like that one as well.
Well, I guess it's true. Never meet your heroes. That's a story that is a good reminder that one interaction can completely change the way you remember someone for better or for worse. The good news, though, Knapp says that it's only part one. Next week, he'll tell the story of meeting Pete Rose and Cal Ripken Jr. on the same spring training trip. And it sounds like those encounters couldn't have been more different. Thanks, Knapp. Really appreciate your Throwback Thursday. Now let's catch you up on everything you need to know around the barn. Alex Golish's decision to move Auburn's entire team off campus for the first 13 days of fall camp has gotten plenty of attention, but on the Top Button podcast, Charlie Five explains that this isn't about eliminating distractions, although that will happen. It's about rebuilding something Auburn has been missing for years.
You know, going to Grand National for 13 days, no distractions, no girlfriends, no pets, no nothing, just ball. I dig it, man. As football has grown, football is the ultimate team sport. And I feel like it's become more and more individual as time has gone on. And this is even before NIL, with recruiting rankings and, you know, everything that goes along with elevating the person, the player, versus the team. NIL has only just completely expedited that. You know, back in the day, you'd always go to camp. You'd go off location somewhere. You know, you've seen it in the movies. And Remember the Titans, Junction Boys. Shoot, I think even the NFL, when they do their training camps and OTAs, is still somewhat of a camp-type atmosphere. And Auburn has played to me as a team of individuals for quite some time. It's felt super disjointed. It's felt just not like Auburn football. You know, freshmen live in the dorms, and then after your freshman year, you just kind of go out and do your own thing. This is just such a great way, I think, to get everybody on the same page. It was funny, yesterday we were walking out of the interviews, and this is about the time everybody was getting there for lunch. When I say everybody, I'm talking about the players. They were filing in, and they were all so like giddy and excited. Like, it's something that I feel like these guys are looking forward to. I think football players as a whole, like, you kind of yearn for that brotherhood. You yearn for, you know, fighting for the guy next to you. I think this could end up being a fairly big recruiting tool. I don't know what other schools do across the country, but I think this is something that kids will start looking forward to.
Look, the biggest takeaway here isn't the hotel. It's the mindset behind it. Alex Golish isn't trying to create memorable two-week experience. This isn't a field trip, a vacation. He's trying to build a football team that thinks, acts, and competes as one unit, period. That's it. Set the standard. And in today's college football world with NIL and transfer portal and social media constantly pulling players in different directions, trumpets playing on the barn. I mean, come on. Creating that brotherhood may be harder than it's ever been before. Will spending 13 days together guarantee Auburn wins football games? No, of course not. But it helps build trust, accountability, and the kind of culture that shows up in the fourth quarter, hands on neck maybe, and close SEC games. It could end up being one of the smartest decisions that Golish has ever made. We'll see. Obviously, it's not important unless it actually turns into something successful. One player, though, continues to come up in every time Auburn coaches talk about the running back room. And it's not by accident. Alex Golish and offensive coordinator Joel Gordon both went out of their way to praise Omar Mapson. That's right. You didn't think I was going to say that one, did you? Thought maybe I was going a different direction? Well, on this week, Village Vice, Zach and Brad talk about why it says more than the depth chart ever could.
And the way he talked about Omar Mapson and Stanton Ramil,
yeah,
like I thought that was pretty interesting, especially like with Gordon and Golish. Whenever they were asked, either of them were actually asked about Omar, but they both found like ways to get to him very quickly.
Yeah,
they're like, yeah, he's physically gifted. He's super strong. He's been putting in the work. He really loves Auburn, and then other things, and like, or he really loves this place.
Yeah,
they didn't do that with anybody else.
Like, no,
it was really important that the bullet point under Omar Mapson was he also loves Auburn a ton, and I don't really know what to do with that, but it was intentional. The fact that they both did it,
yeah,
I thought was pretty interesting.
I don't want to be too dramatic with this because, as you know, that's not my style.
No, let's be dramatic as possible, please.
But I mean, Zach, you've worked with people who are passionate about what they do. They're different. They're different when they have a passion and a love for the thing they do, and they're not just showing up to do a job. And when they're passionate about not just what they do, but the place in which they do it. I was at a thing Monday where we talked about leadership and extreme ownership and believing in the mission and having a passion for the mission. If you've got that, so much of the rest of the stuff is going to take care of itself. If you just start, all right, if you really care about this, chances are you're going to put in whatever effort is asked of you, whatever is required to excel, to do it well. So I think that's important and not just interesting that a guy not just care about being a part of a team or doing a job, but he cares about the place that he's doing it. And I think fans respond to that. And I think it actually affects what you do on the field.
Is Omar RB2 right now?
Yes. I think clearly what I took from Alex Golish and Joel Gordon yesterday was that it's Cobb and Mapson. And then to get to the other 3.5 or 4, depending on which coach is talking, you're going to go after those two. Because they both just glowed so much about Omar. And then Commissioner Gordon talking about Jeremiah Cobb and the way that he's changed his body.
Yeah.
And the way that he's changed his leadership. I thought Gordon was especially interesting because he worked in a leadership component to every player that he talked about specifically, whether it was Stanton Ramil in the offensive line or Jeremiah Cobb. Jeremiah he's not been a talker. He's been he's going to be in his shell. He's going to do his job. You know,
they love saying how much Cobb does not talk. Right. They love talking about how, like, have y'all ever heard Jeremiah like say a word? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't think he loves it, but yeah, I've heard him talk before.
Sometimes the biggest clue about a player's role doesn't come from a depth chart. It comes from how coaches say what they want to say, or maybe even talk about it when they aren't asked about the player. That's what we found out here. This talked about the running back room or a Jeremiah Cobb conversation, and it found itself to Omar Mapson not once, but twice, and not by one person, but two different people, and back-to-back conversations. For both Alex Golish and Joel Gordon to volunteer Omar Mapson's name and then rave about his maturity, his work ethic, his leadership as a youngster that he is, tells you everything you need to know about how highly they view him. Doesn't mean that the running back competition is over for RB2. It's probably far from over. But you know, with Bryson Washington still going to push and Jeremiah Cobb is still expected, obviously, to leave the room. We'll see what Washington does. We'll see what some of the other players do in Davenport and Meadows and, you know, Alvin Henderson. We'll see what that happens. But right now, it seems like Mapson has the advantage. Well, Auburn's wide receiver room may have a new leader as well. Yeah, we heard that on these press conferences and also saw it in fall practice. And if it wasn't for players that most fans expect, well, it's maybe not. You know, if you only watched the second half of South Florida season last year, you wouldn't expect it. But during Tuesday's press conference, Alex Golish revealed that Chaz Nimrod is currently Auburn's number one receiver. And on Barnes Social Hour, the guys broke down why that announcement actually makes a lot of sense. Let's be clear. He didn't actually say it, but the proof was in the pudding. Check this out.
The thing that kind of got brushed over, because, I mean, it was like he said it real quick and then he moved on. And we're like, wait a minute. It was someone asked, you know, how is the wide receiver room looking? And he said, Chaz Nimrod is our current number one receiver. And I, as soon as I heard that, I was like, wait a minute. Me and Graham were talking about how Keyshawn Singleton is going to be the number one. And like, even the videos from practice looked like he was going to be the number one option. So Graham, I kind of throw it to you. Kind of, what are your thoughts on that? And, yeah, you know, we'll bounce back and forth, but yeah, I found that very, very interesting yesterday.
Yeah. So I think everyone kind of expected going into this, it's like, okay, yeah, Keyshawn Singleton is going to be wide receiver one, and then we'll see how it plays out from there. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I think that made sense at the time to think that, because obviously, you know, Keyshawn Singleton had a really good year. He was the leading receiver, leading scorer for, or tied in scoring for the team last year, for receivers at least. And so we're like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. That's just, you know, he's got a lot of talent. You know, he's coming off his true sophomore season, about to be a junior. Makes sense. You know, he's going to be an upperclassman now. That's just right. You know, what's happening. Well, then obviously fall camp comes around and you see, you know, Chaz Nimrod's name start to show up and be more, you know, the coaches are giving him a lot of praise and, you know, just him, you know, being around, doing a lot more, I guess. And then I was like, wait a minute. Chaz Nimrod got hurt last year. Mm-hmm. In the season for USF, only six games in. I think it was the sixth game he got hurt. So sometime in October. And that cut his season short. It took him out for the rest of the year. You know, before he got hurt, he broke his fibula, which is, you know, nasty injury. That's right. Never fun.
Nasty.
Yeah, so that's a broken leg. Anyway, he had 23 receptions for almost 500 yards and three touchdowns prior to the injury, and was leading USF at the time in you know, those stats and stuff.
When you look back at Chaz Nimrod's production before his injury at South Florida, the chemistry with Byron Brown, his experience in Alex Golish's offense, it's easy to understand why he's leading the room entering fall camp. And they love his leadership. That seems to be a very important thing for Golish when he's setting this new standard here at Auburn. And it sounds like players are going to be rewarded for that. That doesn't mean Keyshawn Singleton won't have a huge role or the competition is over. Doesn't mean that we won't have maybe a wide receiver 1A and 1B. Wouldn't that be a great problem to have? It just means that Auburn may already have a receiver the coaching staff trusts to lead day one. And for the record, that could be both of those players. If Nimrod can stay healthy, he could become one of the biggest difference makers in Auburn's offense this season. And being 6'2", being a guy that can be contested on the outside, that can mean big things when they start to creep up to try and stop Byron Brown from running the football. So let me ask you, do you think Chaz Nimrod finishes the season as Auburn's leading receiver, or will someone else emerge by week one? Let us know in the comments. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for pulling up a chair. We'll do it again tomorrow right here on Coffee and Cornbread.